You're listening to a feed of the Association of Music Podcasting at musicpodcasting.org.
And welcome to episode 182 of Erk FM. Erk FM is normally a music podcast that comes down the pipes and into your ears each and every Friday. While I've been in Europe and the UK, also down the pipes and into your ears most Tuesdays. And today I'm in a very strange place. For reasons that will become very apparent. The microphones are familiar. A couple of the people attached to the microphones are familiar. And there's a couple of more people here as well that might make things a little bit interesting. This is not going to be a regular episode of Erk FM, but I thought that it was very important to do this particular episode because I am in the Bugcast Towers. Opposite me is Dave. Next to me is Caroline. Hi, guys.
Hiya.
Hi.
And then next to Caroline and Dave, as you will hear, are their two delightful children, Amy and Cara. Hello, Amy.
Hello.
Hi, Cara.
Hello.
What's it like to have this big Australian guy in your house?
Great.
Now, I arrived here a few days ago. This is my last day before I disappear to head north towards Edinburgh. And last night, as we're recording this particular episode, I was recently on episode 174 of the Bugcast. Dave, what was that like?
Different.
Worked all right.
It work really well. Can I just say, thanks for calling us strange.
That's all right.
In a strange place, yeah.
I'm in a strange place.
In a really strange place. Well, not to us, it's not.
Well, actually, come on. We've always been a bit strange.
We are pretty strange. Are we strange?
No.
No.
Oh, okay. I thought we were.
But, are we really sensible and normal then?
Awesome!
Awesome!
Oh dear.
Well, if nothing else, this next couple of seconds is going to explain that we're strange.
No, we're not strange.
The children. Those are, yes.
Yes.
But, who made the children strange?
You did. But going back to your question.
No. You see, these beautiful children, when they're behaving well, are my children. And when they're not behaving well, or they're a bit loopy, they're daddy's children. Is that right? You don't have to shout.
Australia can hear you just fine.
Sorry about that. But sorry, going back to your original question, what was it like doing the show last night? It was great. It really was good. It's the first ever episode out of 174 episodes we've actually had a live guest.
Yes, unless we
physically here.
Unless we count the time your mum and Shirley were here, but they didn't. They just sort of stood in the background and
they weren't guests. They were
background.
They were the audience
interest.
Yeah, they were the audience role.
I was going to say background nuisance, but that wouldn't have come across right.
Yeah, sorry, Mum, if you listen to this. But yeah, no, it was good. It was good.
Some cracking tunes.
Yeah, well, they were very, very hard and rocky ones for the most part, weren't they?
There was a mix in them.
The only reason you're saying they're good tunes is because you chose
five.
Most of them.
Eric chose three.
I had nothing to do with the music at all this week.
Oh, you did? You press the buttons?
Gee.
It makes a change for you just finding tracks and me doing the info. I actually found the tracks as well as doing the info.
As well as doing the research. This is Irk's show, by the way. We've kind of hijacked it.
Yes, sorry.
No, it's okay. This gives you an insight to what happens each and every Friday night. With the podcast, so
it actually gives you an insight as to what it's like pretty much every day. It's not limited to Friday nights.
Caroline, what was last night's show like for you?
It was good. It was a different way of doing it, but it was quite nice having extra people in. We did notice as well that Irk was very patriotic and all three of his tracks were from his homeland and none of ours were from the UK.
Yeah, all of ours were from sort of America or
Germany, Ukraine. America, Canada. Technically, we could potentially say the Canada one was almost English because it didn't have English place names. Cornwall.
Yes, Cornwall in Canada.
Mm-hmm. So when did you realise that none of the songs that you picked were actually English?
After we started the show and I was going through thinking, oh, look, he's chosen three Australian tracks. Which ones have we got? Ah, none of them.
Around about the same time, or just after, I decided to play a Made in the UK bumper as well. So the irony was not lost.
Well, we'll make sure we do a bit of English next week.
English or British?
British, sorry.
Just out of interest, what nationality are you?
Scottish.
Right. You're Scottish, you're not British.
On the census, I had an option of English, Welsh, Irish, British or Scottish.
Or Jedi.
I chose Scottish. Did you choose Scottish
me? No, you're English.
British. See, in this house, I'm the only one that was born in Scotland. You and Daddy were both born in Slough and Cara's the only Doncasterian.
Yep, you're the only one that was born in South Yorkshire.
Which is a good thing, Cara. You're a proper South Yorkshire lass.
Yorkshire born, Yorkshire bred. She's gone silly.
So, as I'm heading to Scotland, Caroline, any tips, any suggestions?
Don't do it.
No. Avoid the podcast unless you want to get very drunk. But not the podcast.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, please. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, please disregard that last comment.
Sorry. Avoid book fast unless you want to get very drunk very quick. Come on, book fast.
If you want to use that for a promo tape, well, go ahead.
Avoid the podcast at all costs.
Check out Iron Brew once you're over the border, because Iron Brew in the UK isn't as nice.
In England.
And in Glasgow, just remember that by day the drunks are polite, by night they're more likely to knife you.
That's really nice and cheery.
It's probably true, though.
Thanks for sharing that.
Because by night they've had enough money to get a skinful of drink, so they're a little bit less polite when they ask for money. And check out Edinburgh Castle. And remember
at
1 o'clock.
Yes.
The cannon goes and you might jump.
We shall see who jumps and who doesn't.
Yes, that's a good way of picking out the tourists from the natives.
And in Edinburgh, most of the people wearing kilts will be American.
Really?
And will have underpants on.
While Scottish people wear kilts, they tend to wear them for special occasions, not in their day-to-day.
What about women? Do women wear kilts?
Some. I reckon most of the older generation, but generally not in day-to-day use. Oh, and if you like meat, like you do, try haggis. But don't look at what haggis is until you've tried it.
Now, of course, we did have a rather interesting discussion when I arrived about catering for my dietary requirements.
Yes, you see, I'm pescatarian, which means that I eat fish, but no...
You're a pesky vegetarian.
I'm a pesky veggie, yes. So I eat mainly vegetarian food. Sometimes I eat fish, so I eat things like pasta, cheese, vegetables, meat replacement products. And then we were discussing with Erk, and it's like, don't do pasta, don't like vegetables, don't like cheese. So it's kind of a, what can we do? So a little trip to the shop and we got some proper Yorkshire pork sausages.
I haven't had those yet.
No, they I can't say if they were nice or not because I don't eat them.
I was going to ask you what they were like, actually.
They looked okay. They were a bit runny because that's the thing with veggie food. There's no mess or less mess. And then you had Ultimate Steak Burgers last night, I think.
They were nice. Very nice indeed.
So basically, Erk is the adult version of my fussy daughter, Amy.
And of course, we had one of Caroline's famous autocorrect errors, which could have turned very interesting.
Yes, I was going to say about Dave, Erk doesn't like beg.
No.
Beg or something, pasta. But there was no begging involved, and it was a better autocorrect than what it could have been.
Yeah, you do have a bit of a reputation with regard to your typographical errors, don't you? When you do the show notes for the podcast and you type out all the research, you tend
to... But it's not just typing, is it? As I've just proven earlier on.
You read it as well.
Don't drink the podcast.
Yes.
Charlie, go to Andy.
Tell everyone about Charlie.
Yes, it's Erk's fault. He introduced us to Charlie a YouTube unicorn. Video, which is about Charlie the unicorn going to Candy Mountain and then losing a kidney. Around about the time we introduced him to...
Annoying Orange.
Where the Hell is Matt on YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
Key of Awesome. In between losing the game because John's risk is making us lose the game. Oh. Sorry, people. Gotta get enough people hit.
Now, of course, when you guys are recording the podcast live on a Friday night, how do you manage it with these two girls?
They're in bed.
We do it after they've gone to bed. It doesn't always work. Last night we had that little bit of an issue where Daddy had forgotten to tell me to go say goodnight to Amy and I had to appease her.
Oh, make me
out
to be the bad daddy, eh?
We have done the show before and literally just finished and then had to rush Amy off to hospital because she had an attack of croup. But usually, and we have had Amy on the show once when she
was
unwell.
Yeah, she wasn't feeling very well. Well, the first day you started co-hosting the show permanently. She came down and took part.
Yes.
Because she wasn't feeling
but
very
apparently
well.
Our listener said that was one of our best shows because it had somebody other than us, which was quite a backhanded compliment, really.
Then I expect the ratings for this show that we just published to be through the roof.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anybody listening to this, the podcast episode 174, thebugcast.org, tell your friends.
And of course, I will put a link in the show notes.
Excellent.
Now, to go back, Caroline wasn't originally part of the picture of the podcast.
No, I was a spectator who...
A visual distraction.
Challenged Dave, yes.
Yes.
Which I've been very good this week and I've not done that.
What was that you did about an hour and a half ago then?
It wasn't on the podcast.
No, that's true. Oh. But, because it was just me on the show for the first year or so. And then Caroline started doing my musical research for me. And then we made the decision, because I'd had a bonus from work and I was going to get some new equipment to do the podcast with, the decision of whether to buy one or two microphones. And I said to her, if I buy two microphones, will you help host the show? And she went, yeah. So she did.
So how did the podcast come about originally?
Right. It's a fairly long story. I'll try and cut it really short. But basically, there were two podcasts that I was listening to at the time. One's Dumbed Down Life. The other one is called The Random Three. And we were listening to them on a regular basis. And they basically said to me, why don't you try and do a, why don't you do a podcast? And I didn't have the first clue about how to do it. And I had some experience in the audio industry in the past. And I had been told that I have a good voice for radio. So it was just a test. Caroline went out to the gym one evening and I thought, oh, I'm going to record an episode. And the first episode of the podcast was produced. It was only 17 minutes long, had three songs in it and just me waffling on.
It also was about that time we did Unwatch.
You're jumping ahead. even. Yeah, so the first one was released and I put it live. I hadn't even done a website. There was no stream for it, a feed for it whatsoever. So I put the first one live, just forced it in place and said, look, if you like it, let me know. And I think I had 10 downloads that first week. So I did another one. And I think it was you that highlighted, because I forced you to send some feedback, didn't I? And one of the first things that was highlighted was the number of times I said while I was talking, because I didn't know what I was trying to say. So I was using the silences to think, but in order to fill up the silences, I put noises in. And going back through the first five or six episodes, we had something called Unwatch, which is where we challenged people to tell me how many times I said or in a given episode. And in the first six episodes, because we kind of abandoned it after that, the largest number of ers and erms in a single episode was 76.
And how long an episode?
About 25 minutes.
That's a lot of ums and ers.
It's a lot of ums and ers. I'm a lot better than I was.
We both occasionally do an um and an er, but it's not as often now.
Well, since I've been aware of...
Probably because we waffle more.
Yeah. But we don't script. No. We don't script. We just have
the only scripting I have is I have bullet points about the artist to prompt me about what to say about them.
No, that's fine. But when we're talking about actual subject matter, like recent news stories and the like...
Yeah, that is purely off the...
We tend to wing it. Because we're winging it, we're trying to think ahead about what we're going to say as we're saying something
else.
And we
use the chat room as well, because we react to what people say in the chat room.
Mm.
Is that an?
Now, of course,
an of a cent.
Now, of course, when people start the podcast, they could be tempted to edit all of those ums, ers, blank spaces, etc. out. That cross your mind?
I used to. For the first 20, I think it was the first 20 episodes, I used to go through it and take out all the silences, because I'd have mental blocks and there would be a 5 or 10 second silence while I was trying to gather what I was going to say next. So I'd cut those out. But then from about episode 20 onwards, I found I didn't have to go through and edit the show. I topped and tailed for silence, but within the show, I didn't actually take anything out. And it was that, along with the guys from the Dumb Down Life suggesting that I should try a live stream, made me realise that I was ready to do a live show, because I was at the point where I wasn't having to go back and edit all the cruft out of the show.
Yeah.
Meaning I could probably do a show from front to end with no need to make any edits. So, yeah, certainly from the start, I did do a lot of editing. But since episode 24, which is the first one that I did live, I've not done any edits for content other than the one time that I threw my headphones at you because you were getting on my nerves.
No, that would never happen.
No, I would never have done that.
It did happen. It did happen. I'm not proud of it, but it did happen. And another time when we played a song by Chris Michaels.
It had a string of profanities.
And it had a string of profanities in it. Now, when I go through and choose tracks for the show, I tend not to listen to the whole track, because I want to enjoy the track at the first time of listening it as everybody else does, so I can comment on it. And I've fallen foul of that probably only about 3 or 4 times in the 174 episodes that we've done. But on the odd occasion that it has happened, it has happened with such visual specularity. Is that even a word? Spectacularity, even. That it's, I've had to go back and edit the show before I release it. And with that Chris Michaels one, all I did was get the word and reverse it.
Yep.
But everybody knew what the word was anyway.
Yes. But now we have this really nice, cute bumper that the kids recorded for us that warns people of a, this may contain stuff of a sensitive nature.
I actually have it here.
Oh, go on.
Shall I play it?
Go on.
Hello, my name is Amy.
My name is Carla.
The next track contains language or subject matter that may offend sensitive ears. Listener discretion is advised.
Do you understand any word that you said?
No.
Me either.
I need to cut that down a bit because it is a bit long, but we definitely need to include the kids more in the shows.
Because there have been a few times when we haven't done the podcast live for various reasons, like we've visited family or different things. But even when we don't do it live to a chat room, me and Dave tend to record it as live, then release it, don't we? We don't release little segments and...
Since the show started, I've always recorded as live, apart from the early edits. And there have only been two or three shows that I've put together as segments, where I've done all the recording in one place and then put the music in afterwards. I really do not like doing that.
It's just a preference thing, though, isn't it?
Of course it is. When we do Made in the UK show, for example, when we're hosting it, we tend to do the recording, the spoken parts, and then I'll edit in the tracks and stuff afterwards because it's easier. But I don't like doing it. I prefer doing as live.
So if current day Dave could go back and tell old Dave, give himself any tips or suggestions about the early days, is there anything that you do different with the benefit of hindsight, 174 shows of experience?
That's a difficult question to answer because you said the word is experience. And having done the show now for 3.5 years, you've picked up a lot of tips and hints that you probably couldn't teach somebody. It's just knowing what you know. I think the one thing that I would tell myself of May 2008, is don't try too hard. You know, be loose. Don't try and script what it is you're going to do because it just won't flow.
And have me involved from the start.
And of course, have me involved from
the
start.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Would that have advice included having Caroline involved earlier?
It wouldn't have been the Bugcast.
Yeah.
It would have had a different name.
I keep saying we should be the podcast. We've added Moo.
But you've been... That's a point. We missed that. That was your 101st show that we did last night.
Ah.
I mean, it is just a name. I mean, the name's known. Well, fairly well known. But it's...
Sorry about that.
So, yeah, before we were really interrupted, yes, I think if we'd gone back to the start, then yes, Caroline would have been involved from the very early time. But as I said, it wasn't something that Caroline was at all interested in. And I think it was only over the first year of it, that Caroline actually started showing an interest in getting involved with the show, hence you picking up the musical side of things.
Yes. And, I became your researcher. Your
official researcher, yeah. Which was, it was very helpful because it was something else I didn't have to worry about.
Because you didn't at one point say a lot about it. You just said the track.
I just gave the
band and the track name.
Exactly.
But it was me that said that I think they need a lot more info than that because they're letting us play their music.
Exactly.
It's nice to give something back.
Precisely. And that was part of the logic behind it.
And we know we have got friends who have... gone on to buy music from those artists because they've heard it on our show, which is quite a nice feeling.
Mm.
So how did having Caroline involved as a full-time host, how did that change the show?
It changed the dynamic of the show was totally and utterly different because I had somebody I could bounce off.
Yes.
And that's probably the biggest change. Talking to yourself or talking to an audience you can't see is very different to holding a conversation to a group of people you can't see. And having Caroline on the show to bounce off, to get ideas from, to argue with. We've had some cracking arguments on the show.
All in good jest, because we never really
argue. No, not at all.
Because Dave knows I'm always right.
Oh, whatever. yes, so it made a big difference to how the show was done, and it made it so much easier. Since Caroline joined the show as a full-time co-host, I think I've had to do a show on my own 3 times.
Either illness of me or the kids.
Yeah, and I've struggled. I found it very difficult to do the show on my own because I had been used to having a co-pilot there that I could talk to and discuss things with.
Yes.
Hmm.
And I know that your listeners have commented on those shows where Dave has been flying solo. It's like, Caroline?
Where's Caroline? Caroline, come back. We need you.
But I do miss them as well. I have to be really ill to... I mean, we've both done the show before when we've been grotty. But I have to be really ill to miss out on the show. Mm. Very weird at the moment because I can't hear myself because my daughter's stolen the headphones. So I'm hoping I'm coming across okay.
You're coming across fine. Headphones.
So when it comes to music, what sort of music are you both into?
A good mix.
It's very... A very wide and diverse mix. I try not to concentrate on any one particular genre. I prefer it to be a musical variety show than something specific. Although we do genre specific shows. Like we'll do a show that's predominantly with hard rock, or I did an instrumental show about a year ago actually, which I think went down quite well. I've done 3-4 artist-specific shows, which have always gone down well. But I don't know. I personally think the variety way of doing things by actually mixing the styles of music throughout a single show works better.
Yeah, I mean, we always do a theme show at Christmas, don't we?
Yeah, Christmas songs.
Yeah. Including last year, a non technically pod safe artist who it was the 12 Days of Christmas through Drink.
Oh, Bill Barkley.
And it's a Scottish comedian called Bill Barkley. And I took the punt and I just emailed him and said, we do a podcast, we promote loads of music, we're doing a Christmas show. Is there any way that will give us permission to play your track? And he gave us the email back saying, yes, you can. So that was. Went down very well.
I think that's the first time we've used a track that explicitly was not PodSafe.
Yeah,
that we obtained permission to play. Now we've played some mainstream artists before, but that's because their material has been available on Music Alley.
Yeah, Beastie Boys and.
Well, no, the Beastie Boys track was Creative Commons. We've played.
No, but they are a Chuck mainstream D. artist based. Mainly, aren't they?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about obtaining permission for tracks that were inherently not pod safe. But we played Chuck D, we've played Enigma, we've played a Duran Duran track very, very early on in the podcast because it was on Music Alley. And sorry, I just had my headphones kicked off. And anything that's on Music Alley is pod safe. At least we are given permission to assume that anything on Music Alley is pod safe. But of course, that's one of the things I tried to do from the very outset was try and find tracks that were from known artists. Now, that was a big mistake because very few known artists, I'm talking mainstream known artists, have PodSafe or Creative Commons content. And because...
Plus, I think if we'd have carried on that route, we'd have missed some of the cracking people we have discovered.
Exactly. Well, I was just about to say that, actually. Because the motive behind doing a open quotes music podcast close quotes wasn't the music, it was because I wanted to do a podcast. Because the motive of actually promoting the music wasn't there, I didn't concentrate too much on the artist, I didn't concentrate too much on what it was I was playing. And it wasn't until I joined the Association of Music Podcasting in September of 2008, I started taking the music side of things a little bit more seriously. And certainly for now, where we've got to, it is now about the artist, about the music, it's about promoting, what is it that Matthew Ebel said, promoting the starving artist.
But there's so many creative ways you can do that, as well as the podcast. I do creative writing, obviously Erk does, because he's got a book out.
Yep.
And I do a lot of things like fanfic, so it's like pieces of writing based on, and it was Twilight, so people that hate Twilight, yes, I'm a Twilight person. And I'm currently doing a writing contest, so it's like writing a 30,000 piece, original piece within a certain time frame. And one of the things that I've offered to do for the other authors are fan mixers, which is basically a selection of 10 to 12 tracks that are themed around their story. And I agreed to do that on the understanding that all the tracks that I use will be Creative Commons.
Mm.
Because not only do they get a nice set of songs that go with their story, I get to promote not only the podcast that we do, but Jamendo and all the Creative Commons, all the artists there. So what I'll be doing is I'll be linking to the actual track, but also the artist, their album, their website, Jamendo. So I think that's a nice way of doing it. Yeah. And we had so much music, I've managed to find 41 tracks that have fit these four stories that I'm doing. So I've enjoyed doing that.
Yeah. No, it's been good.
So drop some names for me. Who are some of the people that you've discovered whose music that you've really enjoyed?
Ooh. Put us on the spot.
Yeah. Mark Marshall, Alison Crowe.
Alison Crowe,
Kendra Springer.
Creative Commons. Kendra Springer's Creative Commons.
Mark Hungry Marshall, Lucy.
Mark Marshall Sorry. Isn't Creative Commons, but we found his music on Music Alley. We've been very heavily involved in some of the work that he's producing at the moment.
Yeah. Hungry Lucy.
Oh, they are awesome.
They
are
always
really nice.
Go down well. Chamber of Echoes always goes down yeah. well.
Chamber of Echoes is a definite favourite amongst the members of the Association yeah. of Music Podcast.
An Australian
well.
Band called Tenpenny Joke. Love them, especially because they've got a song called Caroline.
Jay,
we've played a number of songs.
We've played quite
Caroline
a lot
over
of
the, over, the,
oh,
over
yes.
the years, including one from Slim,
yeah.
Which fell foul of the censor.
Yes. also, a guy called Sean Fournier, who's actually only got his EP on Jamendo, and then he's got his other albums to buy. But if they're a taste of what you can do, that's really good. And we've got to say one of them, Dave. Diablo Swing Orchestra. Have you ever played in a Diablo
yeah.
Swing?
Oh, yes, yeah. They are exceptional.
Whenever I try
good.
And describe that to somebody, especially somebody who's not into the indie pop music scene, I'm saying like it's an avant-garde metal group. What? And then you play it to them and they're like, wow. Because one of the people I played it to, they don't like anything to do with opera, but they loved Diablo Swing Orchestra because it may be an operatic voice, but the way she uses it,
yes,
it's acceptable.
I only found out because you told me about a couple of weeks ago that it was a female opera singer. I thought it was a bloke doing falsetto. Bad.
There's loads of them. Steve Dunson's a really nice chap. He does a lot of piano mellow stuff. We played him on the episode 174.
Sorry, you were saying?
Yeah, so there's some really corky ones. Who else is there? I've mentioned Kendra Springer, haven't I?
Mm-hmm.
The Nuri, the ones that we just recently found out, they look like they're going to be good.
Yes.
They're a nice German band. Singleton were nice.
I tell you one band.
Lijo Harmison.
Yeah, one band that we do like, that we've discovered recently, and that's Foundry Road.
Yes.
Yes.
Awesome track.
And I love the Me track. I'd like to check them
like
out more.
Like a Fox. Yes. Yeah, that was good. That was the one they've just released here in the UK as a single.
And is it Modus that are the free female
yes.
band? And then I really like the idea of that dynamic to flip it on its side. So, but there's so many. It's so hard. Whenever people say, what are your favourite? You can't really say it because there's so many different artists that...
Yeah. Well, I have a folder on my laptop of every track we've ever played on the podcast. And we are... are literally a couple of tracks short of 900. Now, we haven't played that many artists multiple times, so I would probably suggest that we have somewhere between 800 and 850 artists that we've played over the last 3.5 years. And it does make it exceptionally difficult to pick out specific ones as being above any other.
Yeah.
And we've played some turkeys.
Instrumental wise, though, we've got to mention Matt Stevens because we went to see him live, and he was. It wasn't just the music; it was how he did it and the
passion.
The passion was really good.
Yeah. No, Matt Stevens was absolutely awesome.
And of course, we had Matt Stevens on the show last week, episode 181. So if you missed that, folks, you can go back and listen to that interview. Matt spoke very highly of you two.
Good.
I should think he did. I bought him a beer.
And it was so funny. I took a photo of Dave and Matt because Dave isn't a slight chap.
No.
But Matt is a giant.
He's got to be at least like 28 feet. He's enormous.
I mean, me and Dave are 5'7", but we have a different body makeup. My hips go up to about his rib cage. Mm-hmm. See, I've got like the long legs, short body. He's got the short legs, long body. But Matt was a giant.
Thing about Matt Stevens, he's a big bloke. He's got a very commanding presence, but he is an absolute teddy bear.
He's like
he's got such a soft personality.
My cousin Alistair.
Yeah.
He is 6'6", built, as the UK would say, built like a brick something house.
Outhouse.
Outhouse, yes.
Yes.
And he's got a shaved head, goatee beard, he's got his ear pierced, and you'd look at him and he's the kind of guy that if you're going down an alleyway, you may think twice about crossing the road and avoiding. But he's a mental health nurse.
Yep.
And he's as soft as a brush. And when he speaks, his voice does not match his appearance because he's got a very soft voice.
Yeah.
Very airy, fairy voice.
Hang on.
So how important to you guys is the live element? I know not everyone actually records in front of a live streaming audience, but for you guys, that's very important.
It makes us enjoy it as well as...
It provides an element of interactivity that I felt I was missing when I was doing the show on my own. So which begs another question. If Caroline was actually part of the show from the start, would we have gone live? I don't know. Because part of the reason that I wanted to go live is because I had nobody there. The only responses I were getting were retrospective rather than interactive. We have a famous DJ, radio personality over here in the UK called Terry Wogan. You may have heard of him.
Yep.
And his Radio 2 breakfast show, one of the most famous radio shows in the country. And one of the things that he does is he gets emails, letters, I don't think he was using Twitter at the time, and he reads them back in real time on his show. And I wanted to try and get something similar to that, where I could get immediate feedback from what I was talking about, from the music we were playing. And people don't do things retrospectively. If we play some good music on the show, somebody listens to it. It depends on their circumstance. It's like me. If I listen to podcasts in the car, I listen to a track that Colin from Ouroboros has played, and I think, that's a brilliant track. I've got to write to him and tell him. And I never do.
Yeah, the moment's
gone. Because I can't do that in the car. I can't write an email in the car. But if you're there listening to it live at the time it's being done, all you have to do is type into the chat room, fantastic track, loved it. You can then relay that feedback.
Terry Wogan used to call his listeners togs.
Togs.
Does that mean that we have bogs?
No, because our demographic is somewhat different. They'd be bigs.
Doesn't quite have the same.
Young gals and guys.
Because I know last night the you guys are on way too early for me in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was actually good to be not only in the show, but also in the chat room. And I know that some people were quite happy with my performance last night.
Yeah. I think because most people knew of you, either from the bumper that you recorded for us and the show when you and your mum came onto the show, it must have been at least a year ago, over Skype and actually joined us live. So most people know who you are. And I think for those people that do remember you and do can identify with you, it was good to actually have you there and then, because now they know who you are. You may get some extra listeners as a result.
Yes. And if any of your listeners want to come listen to us, you're more than welcome.
Of course,
to.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, definitely.
We're not always this mad.
Yes, we are.
No, we're a bit madder usually. Something about it, yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, everybody's welcome.
So, what does it mean to have the Australian guy in the house?
Surprisingly.
Easy.
Easy.
No, that's not the right word.
No, it is. Well, I had this conversation with Virk. That when I went to meet him at the Sheffield station, it is bizarre meeting somebody for the first time, but knowing them.
Yeah, we had this conversation last night, didn't we?
No, similar with the podcast. When we went to the first pod crawl, we had never met any of those people. But not only did we know them by their voice and their name, but they came across as they do on their podcast.
Because you still associate them with their voice, because all you know is their voice.
Yeah.
Yes, we've seen photographs of you, Irk, so we knew what you looked like.
You had less of a beard when we were normally.
Yeah, but even from his photographs that he's posted to Facebook of his European tour.
Yeah, if people people watch his Foundry Road tour of his T-shirt, you can do beard watch.
Beard watch. But we still know you by your voice. Your voice is the most.
Iconic.
I was going to say prominent, but I suppose prominent,
yes.
It's the thing that people associate you with.
Synonymous.
You're an audio podcaster. Yeah. People know you by your voice. Now, despite the fact that we knew what you looked like and we knew what you sound like, when I came home from work on Thursday and saw you sat there, I'm thinking, that's Irk.
Yeah.
And then you spoke and then you thought, oh, that's Irk. I couldn't equate. I couldn't put the imagery of what you look like and what you sound like into one person.
Yeah.
And exactly the same thing happened at Podcrawl, like Caroline said.
Yes. How many thousands of miles is it from to Australia?
So
lots.
It's a long way, isn't it? Because it's quite random, because we live in a little place called Conisbrough, which is up north, South Yorkshire, between Sheffield and Doncaster. So despite the fact that Irk is a long way from home in a really quite a small place, one of our neighbours came to visit him because she's known as Crazy Cake Lady and friend of his mum. So it was quite bizarre, the distance thing, but having somebody external into it.
Well, when I came home on that Thursday evening when Irk had only recently arrived, and I saw Lorraine sat there and thinking, that's Lorraine, what on earth are you doing? Oh yeah, you know Judy, don't you?
Yes, due to having a cake with elephants on top.
Mm.
That I linked to her. So yeah, it's. But I think that's the thing with the internet, though. There's no such thing as being far away anymore.
No, absolutely not. Which is both scary and intimidating, but rather fantastic at the same time.
Because a lot of people say that there's a lot more bad things in the world now. I wouldn't say that's true. I think we just know about it more.
Yeah.
Because it used to be people just knew about their own local news, and now people know about the world news more readily available, so they're just more aware of it.
Mm.
Now, according to Wiki Answers, between Sydney, Australia and London, England, it is 10,562 miles, 16,997 kilometres, or 9,178 nautical miles.
And we're about 200 miles up from London.
Well, that's not going to make much difference.
No, but it
adds. I've just tried Google mapping the route from here in Doncaster to Sydney in Australia, and it said we can't do it.
Impossible. Yes.
You can't work it out.
You do it by foot.
Which is weird, because when I tried to get from Nottingham to, I think it was Malaysia, it gave me driving directions, but it doesn't do it from Australia.
If you do, I think it's Sydney to San Francisco, it will tell you to basically kayak through the Pacific Ocean.
Fantastic. No, it's not telling me Malaysia either.
But it's definitely been a lot of fun to be here.
It's been great to have you here. Yeah. It's been a definite experience. A good one.
Yeah.
Recently.
And he survived our kids, which is good.
Mm.
So, well, Irk passed the climb test.
Absolutely.
our two girls are quite friendly anyway, but they are, Cara especially, reserved.
Wary. Very wary.
And there are people we know that they will be quite happy in the room with, but they won't go near.
Mm.
But I don't think Kirk had been with us very long before the girls were climbing on him, so that's a sure sign of acceptance.
I think Cara kind of relies on Amy to help her make her mind up.
Yes.
If she sees Amy climbing over somebody because Amy is comfortable with them, then she'll do the same.
Yes.
So if she is uneasy about somebody, she'll look to Amy to decide whether this person is a nice person or not. But I mean, the kids are very good judges of character. Everybody that we've had here that have been friends of ours, they've made friends with within minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So what's coming up in the future for the podcast? Have you got any plans, anything special for us?
Not really. We don't have anything planned.
No, we mentioned about trying to get more artists on the show.
Yeah, we're going to try and concentrate on the local area as well, because I did a search on Reverb Nation a few months back and discovered there are something stupid like 800 different independent acts that live within 30 miles of here.
Yeah,
which
we're
is
just
something we just weren't aware of.
Linked up with a label, haven't we, that are from round here?
Yeah, there's it's called the Black Label. They don't have many artists on their books at the moment, but they seem to be sort of Northern England based. So we're gonna start getting some material through from them. We may be in talks with a local radio station, who are the radio station itself is an initiative of a recording studio that also promotes and distributes bands' material. And then there's Keith. We really need to speak to Keith from Wavelength about his
Keith Angel
about with some of the groups that he's involved in. So yeah, I think it's more about, well, I think what we need to do, because we don't have that bigger coverage, and despite being around for the last 3.5 years, you know, you'd think we'd have a bigger coverage than we do. So I think that's something we need to work on.
Do you find that you have to explain to artists what you need, what you require? You know, what is a podcast? This is what I need to make it work.
A lot of artists don't understand what podcasting is. They don't understand what it is that we're trying to achieve. They think that podcasting is essentially another form of radio, which it is. But most radio stations are kind of in it for the money, whereas in podcasting there's no money, well, very rarely there's no money involved. So when somebody comes up to you and says, we're from so and so, we're a podcast and we want to feature your music, I think a lot of artists are looking at us and thinking, what do you really want? Whereas in reality, all we want is to promote your music. And I don't think artists appreciate that our motives are actually fairly genuine. We want to put your music on our show. We don't want payment for it. We don't necessarily want to have to pay you for it. So, yeah, I think podcasting is either misunderstood or not understood with the majority of artists that are out there. But on the flip side, you have the exact opposite. There is a cluster of musicians who get podcasting and will support the podcasters.
Yep.
As much as the podcasters are trying to support the artists, which is great because you get fantastic relationships with these artists. Like we've got a very good artist friend from New York, and we the first track I played of his was in the middle of 2008. And he's sending us material that we can't play on the show because it's work in progress. So he'll put down a guitar track and send it to us and say, what do you think of this? That kind of interaction between, let's say, between artist and listener doesn't exist.
Yep.
You're not going to get Foo Fighters release some material on the internet to say, we've just been in the recording studio, we've just laid down this guitar track, what do you think of it? You'd never see that. apologies if Foo Fighters have. I'm just speaking generally here. But because we've got this relationship with this particular artist, we're getting very exclusive, very personal insight into what the artist is actually doing. And it's amazing. It really is good.
So when it comes down to it, you've got some artists who are really involved and really interactive and really active. And then you've got others who sort of get the idea a little bit, and then you've got artists who don't. What can we do to help spread the word?
I think the only thing we can do is just continue doing what we're doing and making sure that the artists are aware. Now, one of our listeners, who is the chap behind the cchits.net website, which is there specifically to promote Creative Commons music, what he does is if he hears a band that he really likes, he will get in contact with them, if they're not already Creative Commons, and say, have you ever considered releasing your music under a Creative Commons license? And I think he's managed to get 2, possibly 3 artists to release tracks or albums as Creative Commons as a direct result. So word is getting out there. Most of the music that we get is from Jamendo anyway. So, I mean, they know what Creative Commons is, these artists. So they're not the people we need to target, because they know what podcasting is and what podcasters do with music. But for the artists that we are going to directly, or being introduced to us by labels, who mostly are trying to target radio stations rather than podcasters,
yep,
they're not fully understanding what podcasting is about. And I think as podcasters, we need to get out there and make sure that artists are aware of what it is that we're trying to do. And I have to say, we are extremely guilty of not doing that. We are absolutely terrible at keeping in contact with artists and just basically keeping them aware with what it is that we're doing and why we're doing it and what our motives are.
I know when I do the research, and I sometimes, if it's MySpace and there's not enough information, I have to go to places like Facebook and that. I think about posting there while saying, oh, by the way, we're playing on your show. And then I worry that I'm not allowed to do that because I'm promoting our podcast. So I think there's a bit of hesitation there from me to know whether I should spam their Facebook.
No, just do it. If you're worried about it, send them a message rather than posting on their wall.
Yeah. So I might do that more often now.
What I've found, if it's music that has been made available for podcast play, like Jamendo, Music Alley, Aerial Publicity, then there's no issue because they know what they've got their music in there for. But if it's artists that have, I don't know, released notification of music on their Facebook page, and they've linked to Bandcamp, and on Bandcamp they have a pay what you like on their album, so you could download it for free, and you think, I'm going to play that track on my podcast and I'm going to let them know that I'm going to do it, that's where you're getting into dodgy ground, because you don't know whether they're happy for you to do that.
Yeah.
Personally, I can't think why artists would have a problem, because they're getting free publicity.
Yep.
But if you haven't got, I would have to say, explicit instruction to say this track or this artist is available for you to play on your podcast, then really you should double check. Now, with Jamendo, it is explicit. You are told you can play this on your podcast. With Music Alley, it's exactly the same. With places like Music Submit, it's on a two-way basis. You can contact them and say, we want to play your track. They will then send you the music. And a lot of the places do exactly the same. But if there's no explicit instruction in place, then you should never assume that you can play the music.
Yeah.
Unless it's Creative Commons, in which case it's you just do what you want to do within the realms of the license.
Which is why when I did those fan mixes, they were all Creative Commons tracks.
Yeah.
because I did one a while back, and there was one particular song I wanted to do, which was it Cool Hunter?
Hunter, My World. That wasn't Creative Commons. No. That came from Music Alley.
So what I did was all the ones at Creative Commons, I linked to the actual tracks for them to listen to. And with those, I gave them the link to the artist to go find out for themselves, such as the MySpace. So
it's all about letting people know who the artists are, where they can get their more music, and really encouraging them to go and buy their stuff. Because that's what it's about.
So speaking of getting people to buy your stuff, how are you guys spreading the word? What are you using to get the word of the Bugcast out there?
Not as much as we should be.
No, I did a little flyer, didn't I, which we need to start thinking about. And I keep saying about getting T-shirts and...
Yeah, well, I think the only way we can do that is by finding a partially decent merchandising store that we can tag onto. I say partially decent because a lot of the merchandising stores aren't.
No.
They're fairly bad quality. But in terms of direct awareness, you've got your obvious ones. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Google+. I'm expecting our Google Plus account to be suspended at any time because our real name is not on it. And Google's policy says you must have a real name. We've got a group on Identica. We're on MySpace, although I don't really check it because I think MySpace is going down the tubes anyway. We have a presence on Reverb Nation. We're on some other sites. Which I can't remember the name of. We're in a lot of the podcasting directories. Like Britcaster, like Mevio, they've got a podcasting directory, Podcast Alley, and various other things like that. We're also on some online radio streaming services, like The Ozone in Taiwan, Stitcher, TuneIn, and stuff like that. So we have presence in various places, but we know it's not enough. We need to be promoting ourselves a lot more. And I've spoken to a number of people and said, look, how on earth are you as successful as you are? Because there's one podcaster, I'm not going to mention who they are specifically, there's one podcaster who I think started their podcast on the same week as I did.
Yep.
And they get in excess of 100,000 listeners per show.
Well,
we're still in two figures. First week downloads, that is.
Yep.
So we release our show on a Saturday morning UK time, and I basically go until the same time 7 days later, and that's how I identify what the key download is for that week. And yeah, I think the most we've ever had in a single week is 100, 102.
Yeah, there was one that went over 100. That was when I did the Moose Tunes show.
Yeah, Moose Tunes, what I think has been our most successful show ever.
Which could just be coincidence.
It could be. It could be. But I just don't know. And the peaks that we do get tend to happen after we've done something special. Like the Matt Stevens show we did when we actually interviewed him. I think we had a really good number of downloads first week there as well. So, yeah, we've had some advice from people. We're trying to put as much of that in place as we can. But there are only so many hours in a day.
Because you have to remember that we love doing the podcast, but we also have, you have full-time work, I have part-time, we have two kids. So it's, because we keep saying we're going to do one called Chew the Fat, don't we? A topical one, but we've never got around to that yet.
We've got the material for it.
Oh, yes.
We can talk for Britain and Australia, it would sound. Sorry about that. We've kind of hijacked your show. In fact, this goes back to what we were saying earlier on about how the dynamic of the show changed when Caroline came along.
Yep.
If this was just you and me talking, then it would be fairly equal. But because Caroline and I are, even as we speak now, bouncing off each other, we're continuing our own line of discussion. So, yeah, you're not getting much of a... This is actually Erg's show. You wouldn't know it, would you?
But that's the important thing. You two are guests on my show, and so it's important for people to be able to hear from you.
But you
people
were a guest
hear from me on a regular basis.
But
on
you
my
were a
show.
Guest on our show last night, and you didn't get much of a word in.
Maybe
I think I'm in love with that. With the
if
music.
You were to go through and you were to look at and actually measure how much time Irk or us spent talking, I think you'd be surprised.
I thought then you were about to say Irk or me and trying to point out that I was the one that was.
You don't talk much.
Don't I?
No. Certainly when we're doing our shows, I tend to do most of the talking. If you're doing your own segment, you do all the talking. Most of the talking.
Oh, I don't know. It depends on
what... But if it's a segment that I'm driving, you don't tend to chip in.
Oh, it depends. Depends on what the segment is. Bear in mind, I do a lot of the reading out of the artist and that. I don't want to dominate it too much.
It's like when we were on Music Manumit a few months ago. I did most of the talking on that. And when we were on...
But with the Music Manumit thing, there were lots of things discussed about...
It was a bit geeky, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I mean, as a girl, I am actually pretty geeky, but I'm not as geeky as Dave.
No. No, definitely not.
Speaking of lots of talking, you know, I have spoken to you about things like Chew the Fat, and then also you've got National Podcasting Postmark for Nana Poo Poo.
Nana Poo Poo, yes.
Which you did last year.
I did. And I think it was quite successful, but it wasn't great. It was an experiment that I think worked, but it could have been a lot better.
Tell us about some of the challenges that you had.
Specifically with Nana Poo Poo.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge, I think, was motivation. Because at the moment, Caroline and I are doing one show a week. And it takes, I spend about three, maybe 4 hours a week in prep, the show, post-prep, and actually getting the show published. You probably spend about an hour, don't you? About 2 hours, sorry.
Yeah.
An hour of research and an hour actually doing the show. So, you know, that's not a particularly large amount of time.
So about 5 hours a week for 1 hour a show, roughly?
Pretty much, yes. But with Napod Pomo, the show was typically about 15 minutes long each day. But in doing that, I had to think about what it was I was going to talk about, because I didn't want to have a show that said, "Hello, my name's Dave, this is Napod Pomo, it's the 2nd of November, here's some music, it's crap weather outside, see you tomorrow." I didn't want to do that. I wanted to have something to talk about. I wanted to have some music that I could introduce. And there needed to be a purpose for doing the show, rather than just to say, yes, I've recorded some audio and published it for a particular day in November. That was the biggest challenge. It was the motivation behind it and trying to identify some content to include in that show, which I managed. But because it wasn't easy to do and I did no actual pre-planning whatsoever, it was a lot of effort.
Because didn't you make a rather late decision to join up?
I think I don't know when I joined. It wasn't like 6 months in advance. It was something like 5 or 6 weeks in advance that I made the decision to do it. And because Caroline was providing some of the content, because she was doing NaNoWriMo at the same time.
Yes.
I introduced... No, in fact, no, I didn't. NaNoWriMo didn't come into Napod Pomo at all, did it? It was in the bugcast that
I gave the odd update until I decided I couldn't finish it in time, so.
You've not done anything with that since, have you, that story?
I still got it on my... I have a pile of so many stories that I need to finish. It's unbelievable.
They always sound so good as well. You think, I really want to see how this story ends.
The writing group I go to, we tend to do a lot of challenges. So he literally gives us a prompt and we come up with something. And I've done some and they've all been, finish it off. It's like... How can I finish? I forgot that one to do and that one to do and that one to do. I have the imagination. I just don't have the time almost to finish them.
That's because you've got so many on at a time. If you picked one and finished it and then picked another one and then finished that one and actually got them done, then maybe it wouldn't seem so monumental.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, sorry, going back to your original question. We are great at tangents. Going back to your original question, I think, yeah, definitely the biggest challenge was trying to find content for the 30 shows and not making them that they didn't have a purpose, not just doing it for the hell of doing it.
And then, of course, you had your regular weekly episodes as well.
On top of that, yes. I suppose in hindsight, I could have just done 25 Napod Pomos and used the weekly show as the other one for that day. For some reason, I didn't want to do that. And I can't tell you what that reason was.
And of course, you had some time management issues as well.
In a big way. That was another challenge, because when I did the first one, November the 1st, obviously, I did that on the evening of November the 1st. So actually getting it published and released so that it could be picked up was about 5 to midnight. But I then did the second at the same time. So I did both shows at the same time.
But by then it had ticked over to the second.
Yeah, so it ticked over the second, so the second was done. So then the idea was that on the evening of the second, I would then record for the third. On the evening of the third, I would then record for the fourth. Now, where I work, I leave the house at 7 in the morning. I don't get home till 7 at night. So by the time you've done all that, and you've settled down, you've got the kids to bed, and you've had some dinner, you're thinking, I just can't be bothered. So I found myself not doing it. But then I thought, okay, it's the second, for example. It's the show for the third. I'll get up early and do the show first thing on the morning of the third, which worked for a few days. And then 1 minute I was late and I didn't have time to do the show. So I had to go to work, which meant I was then doing the show for the third, for that evening, for that day in that evening. But then you go back to the, I'm coming home late, I'm having dinner. It was a real struggle to try and to motivate myself to do what I needed to do. I was finding excuses for delaying the production of the show. So going from recording the audio for a day's show on the previous evening to recording the audio for that day's show on that evening. So I delayed the whole thing by 24 hours. Which then, if you miss one, you're a day late.
Yeah.
And you've effectively lost the challenge.
You lost the game.
I could see that coming. That was in my head and then Eric said it.
Git.
Numpty.
Numpty.
Peanut. I had to get that in there.
Peanut. So out of the 30 shows, two of them were late. Didn't actually get released on that day, but only by about 5 minutes.
So did you find the process of benefit? Did it help with the main show?
It didn't have any impact on the main show. It didn't have any impact on my time management, which is fairly non-existent. I don't think it was an experience, because it gave me an insight into daily broadcasting. But I wouldn't say that it had any positive or even negative impact on the production of the podcast.
Did you find yourself picking up any new listeners?
I don't know. Because when I was doing Napod Pomo, I was I had Libsyn as my web host for the audio. And I blew out my allowance by day 8. So I had to move the audio to a different server, which I didn't have tracking on. So I have absolutely no idea how many people were listening to the show, which was fairly bad on my part. And it was soon after that we moved to using archive.org to host instead of Libsyn. But no, I've lost all sense of how many people were listening or anything with regard to those shows. So it's very difficult to actually gauge.
But is that a consideration anyway?
How do you mean?
Is that a a motivation, like how many people are actually listening.
Oh, yeah, of course it has to be. I think I don't do the show, again, going back to when I started it, I didn't do the show because people were listening. I did the show because I wanted to, and that still exists now. But if it gets to a stage where nobody's listening to it, you have to ask yourself, why does the show exist?
Yep.
So, yes, it's a motivation. I probably am a little bit more obsessed with listen numbers than I should be, particularly when you hear the likes of the award-winning Pete Kogel having hundreds of thousands of hits on individual shows. When you hear of there was a light-hearted competition going on between Justin Wayne and Nick Tan a while ago when they released they did a show together, and they both released the same show, the combined show, on their individual feeds at the same time, and it was the first one to get to 100. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, it'd be nice to get 100. So, in fact, it was that actual incident of that combined show being released at the same time and then battling over who gets the 100th download or the first one to 100 that made me think the numbers that we're getting at the moment might actually not be right. It might not be what we should be getting. Somebody said in an article they wrote on a blog article they wrote on the internet a few months ago, if your show's been going for longer than a year and you're not getting download numbers in the tens of thousands, you're doing something wrong. Now, I questioned what it was that we could be doing wrong. And I got some fairly stern but fairly solid advice as to what it was that we could have been doing wrong. And most of it kind of revolved around the gig going, because we don't go to many gigs. And I could come up with a myriad of excuses why we don't go to gigs. Kids.
Yep.
Full-time jobs. And many other things. But they are just excuses. We should be going out to more gigs. In the last year, we've been to one gig, Love?
Mm-hmm.
Which was the acoustic night where we saw Matt Stevens jump and...
Two in a way, because you went to that one at darts that I had to man the reception.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose so. But the suggestion was that we
three
should
if you include Nick Tan on the pod crawl. And
nope, I'm happy with three. But the suggestion is that we should be going to at least 12 gigs a year, you know, once a month. The argument behind that being, how can you promote something if you're not actually actively participating in it? Anybody can promote music from their couch or from their armchair, which essentially is what we're doing. But unless you're actually going out there and you're doing the, there's a name for it. I'll call it 100% usability, where you're doing what you promote. Then that could be a good reason why we don't have the credibility of what we do, because we're not actually going out there and supporting the artists directly that we are promoting. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Which I get. I totally get that. It's one of the forefronts of marketing. How can you promote something? How can you promote a product if you don't use it?
Yeah.
But there's the time constraint thing. And for us, we don't have much time. But I totally get what this person was saying. And I very much respect them for being open and honest with me and not padding it down or glossing it over. Because this person was fairly stern with me. And yeah, I get that. We should be going out to more gigs. We should be doing more stuff with the artist directly. But sadly, and it this isn't an excuse, there just isn't enough hours in the day. And to be honest with you, I am awestruck, dumbfounded, and just complete lack of understanding how people have got the time to do 48 podcasts you do now. Pete Kogel's got five.
And his net label.
And his net label. Yeah, of course, he started a net label now, Angel Dust Records.
But he probably doesn't get up at 6 in the morning to leave the house just after 7 to get home after 7.
He spends weeks in Germany. He's still got time to do all his stuff.
There's a 6 a.m. in the morning now, Caroline. Really?
Plus, Pete Kogel's kids are like adult age rather than
that is true. Young. That is true. Kids do take a lot of time. I mean, any parent will tell you that. Yeah, ask your mum. That kids do take a lot of time out of your day. They demand a lot of attention. You probably don't now, but
no.
But you know, whilst they're still dependent on you, you very rarely have time to fart, basically. I know it sounds like an excuse, and I'm not. It's not meant to be, but it's just how it is.
So it has been a lot of fun. I'm going to look back on this particular experience as a fond one.
Well, the same for us. It's been fantastic having you here.
And if we ever get to Australia, which unless we win the lottery, it's going to be
not going
to
happen.
We might win a trip.
If you want to pay for our travel, that's just put up the kids as well, though. That might be a bit of a deal breaker for you.
No, I've been a little bit surprised with the kids, actually, how I've actually taken to them. Because normally I don't have a lot to do with people under 4 foot tall.
In fairness, you haven't really had a choice.
Well, that's true. But how good is it to be around like-minded people that you don't have to necessarily explain, why we've overtaken a kiddie's table and and that sort of stuff. I know we were having the discussion last night because where you and Caroline normally record is cozy and it's enough room for you to. It's not built to have a guest.
No. No, it is for us.
And so the original plan was we were going to overtake your kitchen / dining room.
Yeah.
And then I came up with the suggestion about where we are now and where are we?
In our living room.
In the living room. Lovely bright orange and yellow.
Yep, using the kids' dinner table, which is absolutely disgustingly filthy. It's covered in paint. And we've just got the kit spread out on that. And Irk's lounging on one couch. Caroline is very much stretched out on the other. I'm sitting on one of the kids' chairs, which surprisingly is supporting my weight. And it's a very comfortable environment. It's certainly doable, isn't it?
Yes.
In fact, this is how we started when you joined the show. We were doing the broadcast from in here, but we had to set up the kit every time.
But how good is it not to have to set up the kit every time?
Brilliant. But doing this and having a difference, using different microphones, actually having to hold the microphone. I better ask you, because you're the one that's fussy about having to use a microphone. How are you finding having to hold a microphone to where you want it to be rather than having a microphone on a stand that's in your face?
It's different, but then I've not got this like thing stuck in front of the computer. In case people don't know, I turn the microphone upside down because that's kind of what we have, and I can't see the computer without looking down.
So put the microphone so it points up rather than down.
Although I don't do what my husband does with a little pinky.
Yes, I hold the microphone with two fingers and a thumb. The third finger is just sort of hanging there, and the fourth one is stuck right up. Very British, you know. This is how I drink tea.
That's how you drink tea.
Although that is one of the things that I didn't notice last night, Caroline. Not a lot of typey type 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 type.
Dave always picks on me for typing.
Oh, hang on.
It's because I touch type fast.
It's because you type fast and you have nails.
Yeah, they do need
yes,
to trim.
Yes, exactly.
But even when I trim my nails, I still... If I'm typing something really meaningful...
That is a loud keyboard. But that's not the laptop you usually use for the show.
No.
That laptop's in there.
Yeah.
Which isn't quite so noisy.
Because it's got older keys.
Yes.
So what key should we press to reach you guys on the interweb?
There's a specific sequence of keys that need to be pressed. That is www.thebugcast.org.
And if you want to join us live, click slash live on the end.
Slash live at the end. And we are live 9:30 p.m. UK time, which is currently 8:30 p.m. UTC, because we're in summertime at the moment. So however that translates to wherever it is you are listening. Where is the majority of your listenership?
I've really honestly got no idea.
I'm just curious, because with us being based in the UK, most of our listenership is in the UK.
Oh, no, I've got a bit in the UK, a bit in Australia, a bit in the US and Canada.
Right.
We have got a loyal Canadian following.
We do. I'm saying most of our listenership is in the UK.
Stacey, John, Chris, Becca sometimes.
Most of our listenership is in the UK. Sorry, you've lost this one.
Most of our live chat room people are a mix.
Thanks, Erk. I did hear that.
What was
no
that?
Worries. No, don't worry.
You lost
about
the
it.
Game.
Oh. Although technically, I think I'd still lost it from the time before, so that didn't work.
No, you don't get time offs.
No. It's when you're thinking about the game that you lose it, and I think I hadn't actually forgotten it from the last time you tried to catch us out.
But you still lost it.
I was already losing it. So
did you ever have it?
I don't know. No one ever knows. That's the whole point. When you're playing the game, you don't know you're playing the game.
It's
only when you think about it and you lose it, you remember you were playing it in the first place.
Mornington Crescent.
Mornington Crescent.
Well, it's a bit like Schrodinger's cat, really, isn't it?
Nothing like Schrodinger's cat.
If you imagine you're in a box, and when you're in the box, you've both lost the game and you're not thinking of the game at the same time, then you're a loser and a winner at the same time. Until we open the box and you go, Charlie, can you do
it? Oh, no. So I think this interview sort of gives you an idea of what the last few days at the Bugcast Castles, or the Bugcast Towers, as I prefer to call it, has been. It's been a lot of fun. But, of course, I must prepare to head north.
Mm. Yes, I'm going to say, I'm looking at the time thinking, we haven't got long.
Yes, sir. We've got lots of things to do because we're going away and you're going away and you've got to go and do some shopping.
Because you've got to remember that you have to set off to be able to get Erk's train, not set off at the time of Erk's train.
No, exactly.
So we haven't got a lot of time at all.
And you've got to sort yourself out because I'm going to pick you up from the shopping centre.
Which means we've got to be packed beforehand.
The shopping mall.
Do you call them malls or shopping centres?
Shopping centres, usually.
Shopping centres.
Yeah, I think Australia is more like England than America is.
Yeah. Cara dropped into an Australian accent earlier on yesterday.
Mm.
She randomly said something in a little twang. It's like,
what? You drive on the left in Australia, don't you?
We do.
Yeah.
See?
The best
clever
countries
people.
Do. The best countries do.
Yes. So apologies to everybody who don't, but.
So Dave Caroline, it's been a lot of fun.
It's been great.
Yeah.
And on behalf of Dave Caroline, Cara and Amy, it is good night, Interweb. Stay tuned. Good night.
Bye.